Penguin Random House Audio presents Those Who Are Saved by Alexis Landau. Read for you by Saskia Marleveld, Will Damron, and Holly Linneman. Motherhood is a bright torture. I was not worthy of it. Anna Akhmatova. All the goodness and the heroisms will rise up again, then be cut down again and rise up. It isn't that the evil thing wins, it never will, but that it doesn't die. John Steinbeck. Chapter 1. Vera. February 1945. Malibu, California. She cupped the lukewarm water and splashed it over her face again and again. The obsessive remembering ceased. A boon, if even for one breath, not to think. She reached for a nearby towel, but sensed someone standing behind her. Her eyes fluttered open, eyelashes wet, chin dripping. She adjusted to the white sunlit bathroom. In the mirror above the sink, a young woman calmly watched her from the doorway. Helix of dark hair curled over one shoulder, brown liquid eyes, yellow silk blouse, gold chain around her neck, with the heart dangling from it. Her daughter. But her daughter at 18, all grown. Not the 4-year-old daughter Vera had left behind in France. When she spun around, the girl was gone. Vera stared into the vacant doorway and steadied herself against the sink basin, the cool ceramic pressing into the small of her back. Lucy, she whispered into the still air. Lucy. She never stopped thinking of the day they left Lucy, as if reliving it would crystallize or explain something that she had overlooked. But no matter how many times Vera circled back, that day remained implacable. It cared nothing for how swiftly a life could darken. They had gone on holiday early, leaving Paris in the beginning of May 1940, in anticipation of the occupation, decamping to the southern seaside town Sanary-sur-Mer, where they kept a summer house. The Werfels, the Freudenbergers, and Hugo Lafont and his wife, Inez, were already there, and Max and Vera felt safe in the South, among friends, discussing the war in lowered tones as they sipped chilled champagne in Elsa Freudenberger's garden among the lemon trees, the scent of lime blossom infiltrating their fear, lessening it. And the heady scent of fig trees, azure waters lapping against a long sandy coastline, a forest full of pines Vera loved to stroll through, notebook in hand, preparing for an image or a phrase that might present itself, made it seem as though their circumstances had not been greatly altered. She had just finished her third novel about an old French farming family in Vosges. The family's attachment to the land and its customs stretches back generations until the Great War upends their lives, taking away their sons. The novel is from the mother's point of view, and the loss of her sons causes delirious grief. After the war, one son returns, only to relay that the other one died on the Eastern Front. The son who survived has changed, no longer caring for the farm, the family, or the land he's inherited. He only cares for freedom, his own personal freedom. And so the mother learns another kind of grief. Some afternoons, Vera spread a cardigan over the coniferous earth and lay down, contemplating the thrushes rustling overhead, replaying bits and pieces of dialogue the mother has said, or might say, to her estranged son, and, cupping a fuzzy peach in the palm of her hand, she felt lucky. But one early evening in the beginning of June, the setting sun filtering through the linen curtains, Vera listened to the news in the little room on the ground floor where she kept the radio. The terse male voice on the wireless reported that the situation did not look positive, neither in Belgium nor in the Netherlands. Lying on the small worn sofa, she closed her eyes, palms resting on her abdomen, calmed by how naturally, without any effort, her breath rose and fell, wondering what Sabine, the cook, had prepared for dinner, deciphering various smells emanating from the kitchen on the far side of the house. Salmon with fennel and raisins? Then she heard, "All foreign nationals residing in the precincts of Paris
and all persons between the ages of 17 and 55 who do not possess French citizenship must report for internment.
She sat up, lightheaded, a metallic secretion flooding her mouth. Blinking into the falling dark, she switched on the lamp.
Max, she called, standing up.
Walking out of the room, trying not to break into a run, she yelled,
Max,
with a startling roughness. She burst into the dining room, finding the table set, the silver gleaming, the wine glasses waiting to be filled with their preferred dry white from the Marsan grape. Max smoked his pipe in front of the open French doors, surveying the olive trees, their delicate branches cut out against the silvery night. Lucy was sprawled across the sheepskin rug, colored pencils strewn around her. She had drawn a picture of their cat, Murka, with his dangling pink tongue and elongated whiskers.
What's all the racket?
Max asked, resting his pipe on the windowsill. Lucy glanced up from her drawing. Vera stared around the room, as if some irrevocable change should be evident.
I heard on the wireless about the internment.
Oh, that,
Max said in his usual nonchalant manner.
The precincts of Paris. Remember now, that's all they said.
He strode over to her, pushing up the sleeves of his crisp white shirt. Lucy watched them closely. He cupped Vera's shoulder, his warm hand lingering there.
From a military point of view, there's no conceivable reason for interning us here in the South.
What about Paul?
Vera asked, searching Max's face at the mention of his younger brother, who had stayed in Paris. Max had urged Paul to join them, but he brushed off the occupation as if it were a trifle. He couldn't be bothered to worry. She missed him, thinking about how he always arrived late to dinner parties, but was charming regardless. Lucy adored him, treasuring the miniature green alligator purse he had given her for her last birthday, an extravagant and unnecessary gift. But that was Paul. Worry bloomed across Max's face.
He has said we're all overreacting, like a bunch of lemmings jumping off a cliff.
But she could see that he feared for Paul and his parents, as well as for the rest of his extended family, whereas Vera had so few relatives comparatively. Her father had died of heart failure just before Lucy was born, and she'd fallen out with her mother, who, after her father's death, took up with a South American polo player. The last time they spoke, her mother flaunted having paid for forged papers and suggested that Vera not call on her again, as such contact would compromise her new identity. Agnes came through the double doors that led into the opposite hallway.
Is everything all right?
Normally she would have knocked, waiting timidly for permission to enter. She had the night off, and Vera had expected that she would take one of her beloved long walks and return after dinner with bits and pieces of gossip she had picked up in town. Vera said that of course everything was all right, casting a look at Lucy. But there was a sharp knock at the front door just as Agnes started explaining something she'd heard from the neighbors. A gust of wind caused the open windows to swing shut. For a moment, everyone froze, and Vera thought, "No, they have come for us. They are going to throw us into a camp. I'll be separated from Lucy." She began to sweat and tried to walk, as naturally as possible, to Lucy. Kneeling down next to her on the rug, Vera felt her breath shorten, her pulse accelerating. Sabine appeared from the kitchen.
"Shall I get the door?"
It was only the Frodenbergers, thank God. Just seeing Elsa in her silk kimono decorated with golden koi, her hair pulled back into a severe bun, and Leon in his pinstriped suit and straw fedora washed Vera with relief when she ushered them inside. They looked the same. Perhaps things weren't so bad. But then Leon asked somewhat shakily, clutching his hat in his hands.
Have you heard?
Max sauntered out of the living room and retorted,
Oh yes, we've heard. Come on, let's have a drink.
Over a bottle of whiskey, they obsessively discussed the situation. The later it grew, the blurrier all the reasons appeared for why the internment had been put into effect, and whether it would apply to Vera and Max. Both were from St. Petersburg. Their families had immigrated to Paris during the Revolution over 20 years ago.
Since then, we've lived.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?